The North Carolina Reading Service presents this broadcast for our blind and print-impaired audience. It's John Federson reading The Indie Week. Our current issue is dated May the 4th of 2022. And we thank our musicians this week who've come up from the Python and Constrictor Musical Ensemble of Central Florida. Somehow they've managed to squeeze their way into our very small studios today. Thank you. And as we've been doing recently, we're going to move between the print issue, which was published on May the 4th, and more currently the Indie Week website, indieweek.com, which will occasionally include updates or even new articles. But this first article by Tomasi McDonald from Durham called Forthcoming Judgment. One of Durham's Chief District Court Judge Pat Evans's courtroom decisions was cast in the glare of a critical public spotlight last month when the News and Observer reported that Evans denied a Duke University student a no-contact order that would have given the student protection from a male student who, she says, initiated non-consensual sexual contact and stalking. The female student described two October encounters with the male in his dorm room, including one when she spent the night there. He testified that the student repeatedly bit her breasts and penetrated her with fingers without permission. The young woman submitted photos and in her testimony said they showed 10 to 20 bruises from the bites, reported the NNO. Before issuing her ruling, Evans said it was a difficult case and that the, quote, young lady is obviously in distress. But Evans added that she was, quote, reminded of the reason for marriage and commitment, according to a copy of the court transcript the Indy obtained. Now, quote, now these are old-fashioned principles, but there is a rationale behind them because when we do things, because we have the opportunity or you have the free choice, you can choose what you're going to do. But you cannot choose the consequences of those actions, she said in court. Therefore, again, we have a young lady in obvious distress. We have a young man whose life could be changed forever as a result of my decision. The female student's attorney, Carrie Sutton, told the NNO that it was classic victim blaming. Sutton last week told the Indy that her client was hurt. Quote, what it tells me is there are a whole class of litigants who shouldn't be in front of that judge if she feels that strongly. Evans was first elected as a district court judge in 2002. She's facing a formidable challenge this election season from Kevin Jones, who has earned endorsements from the city's two most influential political action committees, the Durham Committee on the Affairs of Black People and the People's Alliance, to preside over District 14's Seat 3. Jones has also outraised Evans by $11,800 to Evans's $1,500. As of December 31st. As the Indy researched this story, Bull City journalists, residents, and members of Durham's judicial community unfailingly posed one question in their descriptions of Evans' courtroom behavior. Quote, have you talked with Muffin? Muffin is Andrea Hudson, a longtime Bull City resident and executive director of the NC Community Bail Fund of Durham. She told the Indy this week she's been waiting for someone to run against Evans since 2014. Hudson says, quote, she's a tyrant. I haven't seen any compassion in her sentencing or how she talks to folk even in juvenile court. She says she's a devout Christian. But to me, when she looks at black men or black women, it's like she's disgusted and upset that they are there for any reason. She's a black woman, and it's like she's offended that they are in court. Hudson says that she was on probation in 2014 for a traffic violation when she served 30 days in jail after she was convicted of assault with a deadly weapon, inflicting serious injury. The day she got out of jail, she had to return to court and stand before Pat Evans. My attorney told her, I just did 30 days in jail, Hudson said. Pat told me, quote, if you did 30 days, what's 10 more, and sent me back to jail. Upset, Hudson said she started yelling. She had to pick up her 8-year-old child up from school. Pat told the court clerk to call Child Protective Services to pick him up, Hudson says. My daughter ran out of the courtroom to pick him up. My child stayed out of school the whole 10 days. I was locked up because she was afraid Child Protective Services would take him away. Hudson's work with the Community Bail Fund includes court watching. She says it was while working as a court watcher with the nonprofit Spirit House 2014 through 2016 that she realized that what happened to her in Evans' courtroom was not an isolated incident. But Evans has her defenders. They include young attorneys who are making a decisive footprint in the city, older legal colleagues, her fellow candidates campaigning together on the Better Bull City slate, along with Durham activists and residents who see her in the streets trying to stop gun violence. Evans, they say, is cut from the same fabric as longtime, no-nonsense Durham Judge Carolyn Johnson, who in 1986 became the second black woman elected to the bench with the campaign slogan, Firm and Fair. Evans declined to comment for this story after receiving phone calls and an email from Indy. A cursory look at Evans' social media presence reveals a longtime trusted public servant who has earned respect among residents in some of the city's communities hit hardest by gun violence. She's frequently lauded by Durham Mayor Elaine O'Neill as a person making a difference in the streets during a period of near unprecedented gun violence. One of Evans' colleagues and peers is Karen Shields, who started practicing law in Durham in 1974 and served as a district court judge from 1975 until 1980. Evans was an assistant DA while O'Neill was a young attorney. Shields, who now works as a defense attorney, endorsed Evans and told the Indy this week, quote, Evans is a good judge. I was a judge, and I don't say this lightly. I know Judge Evans and watched her over the years. I've been in her courtroom and have seen how she administers justice. Shields says, when people are not satisfied with how justice is dispensed, it leads to dissatisfaction and criticism of a judge's decisions. She adds that even among fellow judges, there might be disagreement with how a case was handled, but it's also important to consider a judge's entire record and not, quote, base it on 1, 2, or 3 cases. Shields questioned the agendas of the people and media outlets who criticize Evans' administration of justice and wondered why they aren't, quote, spending time keeping folks out of jail, or addressing, quote, mass incarceration, not whether a person smiles or doesn't smile. Shields says, the North Star is always fairness. This is what it's all about, Evans said on April 19th, while standing in front of a cache of long rifles and handguns that were turned in as part of the Bull City Strong Gun Buyback Program she organized with Durham Sheriff Clarence Burkhead. Stop the violence, she said. We have to take our street back and make them safe. Former Durham Police Chief Steve Chalmers told Indy that he's not familiar with Evans' work in the courtroom, but lauded her work with justice and gang-involved youth since 2016 with several community groups. Those include Men of Vision, Women of Vision, of which he is a charter member, and New Durham Vision, through which she facilitates meetings between justice and gang-involved residents as a means of addressing violence and providing them with support. Chalmers says, I know where her heart is and her passion for this community. But nearly a dozen of Evans' critics, including activists and attorneys, told Indy that while presiding from the bench, she does not respect young women attorneys or newcomers. She makes negative comments under her breath about the people appearing before her and berates prosecutors and defense attorneys. As the county's chief district court judge, Evans supervises the county's magistrates and is in charge of the district court judges' schedules. She has been accused of scheduling judges based on favoritism. One young woman attorney told Indy, the judges she doesn't like, she schedules in places where they have no impact. adding she has a different demeanor out in public. To the voters, she presents as a sweet old lady, but she's hell on wheels. Another woman attorney told Indy that Evans, quote, criminalizes people's feelings and places them in contempt of court. She locks people up, this is a quote, she locks people up longer because she doesn't like their attitude. She has put lawyers in contempt, too. She doesn't discriminate. Most of the incumbent judge's detractors, particularly attorneys, declined to make their names public because they didn't want to cross any ethical boundaries, but mostly feared having to go before Evans if she wins another term. Hudson says, if she wins, their clients will suffer. They know she will retaliate. They can't say that, but believe me, I asked. They say, if I say something and she wins, I won't be able to win another case in her courtroom. Shay Ramirez owns Shabella Dreams, a recreational center along U.S. 15501 that focuses on personal empowerment, self-esteem, and confidence. Ramirez says Evans presided over a case in 2017 when her then 14-year-old daughter, who is gay, was served a no-contact order at the behest of the mother of a 17-year-old girl who was her daughter's girlfriend while they were both high school students. Ramirez told the Indy, the woman didn't want my daughter turning her daughter gay, adding that Evans, quote, didn't really comment about her child's sexuality, but how she treated her. I knew where she was coming from. Pat went there, Ramirez says. She was nasty and rude. Her whole demeanor was disrespectful and rude. Ramirez said she went to court several times with her daughter before the other mom dropped the case. Ramirez says of Evans, don't say you're a Christian and you can't do the one thing God commanded each and every one of us to do, love people. God is love. Questions about whether Evans could rule fairly with cases involving members of the LGBTQ community came up again early last month when she posted photos on social media about her attendance at an event to honor a Domestic Violence Heroes Award with Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, who made public comments calling transgenderism and homosexuality filth. Evans is campaigning with a group of candidates who have come together as Better Bull City. The other candidates include Jonathan Wilson, who is challenging Satana DeBerry for district attorney, Jessica Major, who is vying for district court seat held by incumbent Dave Hall, school board candidates Jasper Fleming and Donald Hughes, and Clay Aiken, the openly gay 2003 American Idol runner-up who is running for the U.S. House seat in District 4. In a statement to the Indy this week, Aiken said he's a Christian and is disappointed that, quote, anyone would assume someone to be LGBT based on their Christian faith. He said, the God I worship loves all people, and in every encounter I've had with Pat Evans through the years, I've experienced only the same type of love and acceptance from her. Aiken added that Evans was the very first elected official in Durham to call and congratulate him when he entered the U.S. House District 4 race. Quote, I've seen her be a champion, a supporter and a friend to me and to many LGBT people, including her own openly gay son. She shared wisdom from her decades of public service with me and other inspiring LGBT leaders like Donald Hughes. I have never once felt anything but loved and respected by Judge Evans. In an April 8th social media post, Evans dances in her judicial robes while demanding folks put some respect on her name. Activists, residents, and members of the local legal community who say they have been berated and browbeaten by Evans ask that that sentiment be reciprocal. Next article from Jasmine Gallup, Orange County, A Culture of Fear. Pedophiles, groomers, communists. These are names angry parents railing against mask mandates, LGBTQIA plus inclusive books, and classroom discussions of racism have called members of the Orange County Board of Education. For the past 2 years, run-of-the-mill conservatives and right-wing extremists have turned out in force to decry the school's district progressive policies, wearing T-shirts that read, "Educate, don't indoctrinate," and echoing the motto of parental rights group Moms for Liberty, "I don't co-parent with the government." Tensions peaked in September when some 50 members of the Proud Boys, a white nationalist hate group, attended a board meeting in uniform, prompting the board to pass a resolution opposing, quote, incidents of hostile and racist behavior, and consider measures to buffer schools from political protests. That hasn't dampened conservatives' fervor. As the election approaches, some liberals are worried about the momentum groups like Moms for Liberty and the Education First Alliance have built among voters in Orange County. Local members of these groups are active at OCS board meetings, showing up weekly to criticize the board's actions. Now, these groups' members, along with member of local parent protest group OCS Truth, are campaigning to elect a slate of conservative candidates to the board who are expected to reverse progressive policies. With 4 of 7 seats up for grabs, the future of education in North Carolina is on the line. Republicans and unaffiliated voters could flip the current progressive majority, especially as board members Brenda Stevens and Hillary McKenzie, whose terms end this year, are not seeking re-election. Of the 7 candidates running, 3 are conservative: Bethany Lee, Penny Carter King, and Ann Purcell. Some hold worryingly extreme views. During the past 2 years, a quorum of board members, Stevens, McKenzie, Carrie Doyle, Jennifer Moore, and Sarah Smiley, have passed some of the most progressive school system policies in the state. The board's gender support policy, approved in 2020, outlines how staff should support trans students by using preferred names and pronouns, addressing health and social needs, and preventing discrimination and harassment. Conservatives have attacked the policy, saying it allows school staff to keep secrets from parents about their child's gender identity. In fact, the policy attempts to balance support for trans students with, quote, the requirement that parents be kept informed about their children. And it states in some cases, transgender students may not want their parents to know about their transgender status. These situations must be addressed on a case-by-case basis. The paramount consideration in such situations is the health and safety of the student. To promote racial equity, the board has worked to reduce suspensions, reduce students' proficiency gaps between minority and white students, make schools more responsive to alternative learning styles, and hire more minority teachers. Last year, board members also voted to change the names of 2 schools originally named after people with racist ties. Most recently, the board voted unanimously to retain LGBTQIA inclusive books Gender Queer, Lawn Boy, and Out of Darkness in school libraries. Moms for Liberty and OCS Truth campaigned to ban those books. Board members Will Atherton and Bonnie Hauser joined the progressive cohort on that vote. Atherton, who's running for re-election, has been relatively quiet about his decisions to vote yes on the gender support policy and retention of those B-themed books. In Indy Week's campaign questionnaire, he simply stated he voted to support families and students, saying, "Everybody seems to want to make this election about books and whether you support LGBTQIA students. Equity is about making sure every student is getting what they need. It's about making sure our schools are welcoming and inclusive." Although Atherton and another candidate, school resource officer Andre Richmond, have received some support from conservative groups, they each espouse progressive ideas. Atherton says, "I am not a conservative. I'm not running on a campaign of change. What I want to do is go forward and improve our policies as we're coming out of the pandemic." Atherton says he will focus on students' academic success and the retention of teachers. He says the district needs to continue work to reduce racial disparities between students and disavows the idea that critical race theory is taught in schools. Richmond, who is campaigning on school safety, did not respond to requests for comments from Indy, but did talk about his platform last month during a Meet the Candidates roundtable discussion hosted by the Hillsborough Orange County Chamber of Commerce. Richmond favors letting school administrators handle student discipline and sending students who commit crimes to diversion programs rather than juvenile detention, he says. Quote, if a child does something wrong, we normally allow the schools to deal with the situation first. And if it's a repeated offense, then we get involved and we send them through diversion programs and we try to get them help, he said during the roundtable event. We're not here to see how many kids we can lock up. We're here as a resource and we're here to bridge the gap to make sure our kids understand how important law enforcement is. The current school board's progressive platform has drawn conservative ire, prompting criticism from the Orange County GOP and spawning groups like OCS Truth. They, along with Moms for Liberty, encourage parents to monitor district curricula and speak up about lesson plans they don't like and file complaints about teachers who discuss race, gender, or sexuality in the classroom. Christina Clark, a high school English teacher and president of the Orange County Association of Educators, says, it's actually a pretty scary situation. We have this very active group that's been going to car lines and giving parents misinformation about how our intentions are as far as teaching. Clark says the group has also passed out flyers in teacher mailboxes. That feels like a threat. She says, it's like we're watching you. We're making sure you're only teaching whatever they think is appropriate for students, rather than trusting our discretion as professional educators. Without context, nationalist, racist, and transphobic arguments can come across as patriotic and protective. Moms for Liberty frames its attempts to ban books as efforts to protect children from pornography and sexual predators. Right-wing activists frame attempts to teach students about white supremacy as efforts to indoctrinate children, foment division, and take agency away from parents. Bethany Lee, Penny Carter King, and Ann Purcell are three candidates right-wing groups support in this year's race. Neither Lee nor Purcell responded to requests for comment from Indy. King responded to Indy via email. Lee, a stay-at-home mom and registered nurse, has adopted the arguments of Moms for Liberty, her top campaign contributor. Her campaign manager, John Posthill, is also the vice chair of Orange County branch of Moms for Liberty. During last month's roundtable event, Lee said she entered the race because she was frustrated by the lack of support her daughter, who has Down syndrome, received at school during the COVID pandemic. Lee said the requirement that her daughter wear a face mask during speech therapy impeded her progress. She also said that mandates around COVID testing, mask wearing, and participation in sports and extracurriculars should have been lifted last spring. When asked if she supported using LGBTQIA students' preferred names and pronouns, Lee said no, saying, just because a child says that they're Batman doesn't mean they're Batman. I'm not going to sit there and tell a five-year-old they're going to be a girl just because one day they decide they want to be a girl. In a candidate questionnaire in the News and Observer, Lee wrote that schools have punished teachers for, quote, personal health decisions, and ignored and excluded parents. She also argued teachers are trying to sway children to accept their views on ideology, sexuality, and politics. In a questionnaire from the OCAE, Lee wrote that, quote, explicit books should be moved from school libraries and sent to public libraries, overlooking the fact that schools are public institutions. None of it is for educational purposes, she adds. It's in material that no way should be in schools. On race, Lee suggests schools have discriminated against white students by discussing racism in our society and political institution. She wrote in the questionnaire from the NNO, the continual narrative that people are treated differently based on color only makes people believe it's true. People are literally segregating themselves in the name of racism based on the color of skin, not realizing that this is racist in itself. My cousin has adopted two girls, one white and one black. They all have the same opportunities. No one color has it harder than the other. Lee has made concerning comments about racial disparities in education. In response to a question about the achievement gap between students of different demographics and the OCA questionnaire, Lee wrote, "It's not a school issue." She wrote, "The fact is, each race has their own culture and way of seeing education. Some communities do not value education as much as others. Some parents push their kids to be educated as possible, and some don't." Registered in 2010 as unaffiliated, Lee voted in the Republican primary in the 2016 presidential election. King, a pharmaceutical researcher, takes a softer approach to criticism of the current school board. She writes on her website, members are more, quote, focused on furthering political agendas than improving teacher morale and student performance. Quote, politics are the enemy of our children. If we cannot get it together, there is no progress. We need to elect candidates that put our children and educators first. We should be laser focused on our children's education. This is a narrative of OCS truth, which paints itself as an advocate for students and teachers, insisting the current school board is not focused on improving student achievement, nor giving teachers the support they need. The OCAE recently denounced OCS Truth in a statement on social media, asking the group to stop using OCAE's data, logo, and name, quote, in a confusing attempt to legitimize their cause. Quote, these groups cause concern for teachers' morale. These groups claim concern for teachers' morale, while disturbingly, they exacerbate low teacher morale by breaking down trust between educators, students, and families, the statement reads. They break down this trust by spreading false fears about the material we carefully select for students. They question our professional judgment and our compassionate pedagogy. Although OCS Truth argues teachers and staff are distrustful of the administration, Clark says the school board has been extremely supportive of educators, saying this board has been singular in how responsive they've been to educators, parents, even to students as well. They talk to everybody. They come to events. This is something I don't think was happening before we had this board. Compared to other districts in the state, our district has been very supportive of educators. In King's OCAE questionnaire, she says she is in favor of vetting books with LGBTQIA content, adding, the problem is explicit images. She wrote in her email to Indy, I would like to see these books available, but maybe not to all the students. Perhaps we could house them in the guidance counselor's office. King, who is unaffiliated, has voted in primaries for both parties, most recently the Republican Party primary in 2020. If elected, King said in a News and Observer questionnaire that her top advisors would be current school board members Atherton and Hauser, as well as Stephen Halkiotis, a former school board member and one of her top campaign contributors. Halkiotis served 12 years on the school board before stepping down in 2020. He was a moderate voice for the district, advocating for an examination of possible legal landmines before voting to ban the Confederate flag and other symbols of hate in schools. Halkiotis also initially opposed the board's racial equity policy before ultimately voting yes on the measure in 2019. Today, Halkiotis is the co-founder of the Friends of Orange County Schools, a PAC that supports King, Purcell, Atherton, and Richmond. Halkiotis describes himself as a moderate Democrat and is no fan of the current board, saying their, quote, far-left agenda distracts from issues of student performance and teacher morale. Quote, so much attention has been paid to political ideologies of the far left, we have forgotten that the primary mission of a public school system is to educate children. It's not to be a social media platform denigrating Christopher Columbus, denigrating Abraham Lincoln. He was referencing debates over whether to teach children about Columbus's massacre of Native Americans and Lincoln's complicated views on slavery. This is kind of nonsensical. Halkiotis argues the school board has prevented parents and community members from expressing their concerns. He cites that now infamous fall school board meeting when sheriff's deputies escorted public commenters, including Proud Boys, out. Quote, there's too much influence going on by two far-right groups and two far-left groups. All the current board has done is provide immense dissension and division. They, in effect, have prohibited the community from having a reasonable discussion because of fear-mongering. Ultimately, Halkiotis says he wants the board to refocus on helping all children become successful, including through creating individualized education plans and giving more resources to schools. And Ann Purcell, a former Orange County school principal, has said some LGBTQIA inclusive books would be better kept in the guidance counselor's office. Quote, that way it's giving the child a chance to have somebody to talk to. It's giving them a resource. It's giving them an opportunity to not be checking something out in the media center where other children are looking at them and may taunt or bully them. On racism, Purcell said she's observed more among students of color than among white students. During the roundtable event, Purcell's initial statement was that while she was principal, any incidents of racism in schools were dealt with immediately and thoroughly. Quote, any time you have a situation that's bringing up issues of race or somebody being racist, it needs to be stopped right then and needs to be met with head on. The only way to do that is to have conversations. She added that she mostly observed name-calling between students of color rather than between white and minority students. Quote, I have seen students of color calling each other students of color names, and when I have had conversations with those students, they say, it's okay for me to say that to my buddy, they're my friend. But I'm saying, no, it's not okay to say that, not here. That's where I have seen problems on race the most. I've seen some white students calling students that, and with me, it's been addressed. But I have seen more cases than not of students of color saying to other students of color that I have called them out on it. Moving along now to two articles about upcoming elections. Carrboro, two town council candidates. Lena Geller from Indy Week says someone has been stealing Aja Kelleher's campaign signs. During a 6 a.m. stakeout, one of her supporters caught the culprit on video, but police have yet to ID him. The grainy footage shows a white guy in his 20s or 30s wearing a neon yellow vest and running fast enough that he could have been the star of his high school cross-country team. In some small towns, that might have narrowed it down, but this is Carrboro. Kelleher's signs were stolen last November, too, during her first bid for the town council. She lost that race, receiving the fewest votes of the five candidates, but when former town council member Damon Seals was elected mayor of Carrboro that month, Kelleher decided to vie for his empty seat. She's currently running against Eleazar Posada in the upcoming special election on May the 17th. The reason for stealing signs is up for speculation, but Keller, who works as a senior principal engineer at Fidelity Investments, emphasizes that she's, quote, considered an outsider in this campaign. Her campaign is largely self-funded, her public service experience is minimal, and she doesn't have ties with the town's mayor or existing council members, saying, I think people look at me as if I'm some sort of rogue. She's also running as an independent, which in a town as liberal as Carrboro is turning some heads. I don't agree with everything the Democrats endorse, Kelleher says, but I identify more with them than I do with Republicans since Trump came into office. Kelleher comes from a conservative family. Her father is a Korean immigrant, and her mother is from Alabama, and Southerners and foreigners tend to be more conservative, she says. She was born and raised in Chicago, where she met her husband, an Irish national who also works in big tech. A little over a decade ago, she and her husband moved to a subdivision in Carrboro to accept job offers in RTP. After relocating, Kelleher also spent 7 years at the helm of two small businesses in Carmel Mall, the Bead Store, now known as Firefly, and Artisan Gifts. She says, there's a lot of Koreans that are merchants here in the States. It's a very entrepreneurial, self-starter type culture. That's one thing that makes me different from a lot of counselors on the board, because they all work for universities and public entities. Kelleher was a registered Republican until July 2020. Some of her fiscal stances still swing conservative, she says. For example, she's against the town's 203 project. That's a $30 million development that will house a new library, performance space, and virtual justice center, amongst other community-based facilities. She says, it's like, whoa, you're turning all of downtown into a social agency. Even on a liberal level, we have to have some retail. Building a library doesn't increase the town's revenue, but it does suck up taxpayer money, she says. Critics have countered that libraries actually do bring additional revenue and that the 203 project is not projected to increase tax rates. Kelleher also takes issue with the project's impact on available parking and generally with the town's negligence in implementing a parking plan. Last week, when the Carrboro Business Alliance raised the need for more parking at a town council meeting, council members disregarded the alliance concerns and changed the subject to bike racks, Kelleher says, adding, I was like, for God's sake, we're not talking about bicycles. We're talking about parking cars. Adding that the town's anti-car rhetoric is elitist. Can we just not talk about bicycles for 5 minutes? Affordable housing is also a priority for Kelleher. She thinks the town should use existing buildings or develop complexes downtown instead of constructing high-density housing in single-family subdivisions. A latter approach will aggravate tensions between old and new residents. She points to one proposal to construct a complex in the Fair Oaks neighborhood. She wrote in her Indy questionnaire, there are neighbors and residents at odds over these parcels, neighbors being labeled as NIMBYs and others shaming people on not wanting to create a dense housing complex as being anti-affordable housing. Building affordable housing in subdivisions may also come with environmental problems, she adds, using, again, that Fair Oaks proposal as an example. Quote, is this land with an 18-degree slope that flows down to a drainage pond below and houses at the bottom of its ravine even appropriate for development? Carrboro's, quote, terrible track for stormwater management is what initially motivated her to run for town council. She used to be neighbors with a man named Tim Carless, who spent years begging the town to do something about stormwater flooding issues in his home. The town never did anything, she says. Then last June, Carless died of esophageal cancer. She felt compelled to step up. He was constantly getting sick from the floods, Kelleher says. I theorize that if that hadn't happened to my dear neighbor, his life might have been different. He might be alive right now. If Kelleher doesn't win the upcoming election, she has pledged to never run for public office again. She's tired of having her signs stolen, being labeled a NIMBY, and receiving hateful comments on Twitter. Recent Twitter attacks have focused on her tangential involvement in an alleged racial assault on Carrboro Coffee Shop, present day on Main, where a woman carrying Kelleher's campaign materials called 9/11 after the shop's owners, one of whom is black and queer, told her to leave the premises. The shop was closed for a private event. Despite not knowing the woman, Kelleher released a public apology after the incident, calling it, quote, white privileged behavior. Kelleher, who contributed to the One Orange Countywide Racial Equity Plan, emphasizes that one of her goals is to give a voice to underrepresented groups in Carrboro, communities of color, for one, but also those who don't exclusively adhere to progressive ideals. She says, look, the town is like 90% liberal, but the 10% that aren't just doesn't say anything because it's too divisive. The winner of the upcoming election will serve on the council till December of 2023, when Seal's term was supposed to end. If Kelleher succeeds in her bills, in her bid for the open seat, she says she doesn't plan to run for re-election next year, but, quote, you never know. And to that other candidate in the same election, Eleazar Posada's birthplace was determined by a sugarcane season. When he was in the womb, his mother worked as both a farm worker and an itinerant labor organizer, traveling around the country to liaise between farm owners and their employees. Posada's late October due date happened to coincide with the start of sugarcane harvesting in South Florida, where his mother, a bilingual immigrant, was helping secure workers' pay, housing, and transportation, and working alongside them to support her family. Posada says, she taught us from a very young age that community work was the key of what we were going to do. Several years later, Posada's parents settled down in Texas so their children could have a more permanent home base. Soon after, though, his parents divorced, and his mother found herself struggling to make ends meet. Posada and his brother started waking up at 4:30 a.m. every day to peel potatoes and crack eggs, which their mother cooked into burritos and tacos and sold to neighbors for breakfast. She went with him to school, where she worked in parent engagement. Then in the afternoon, she brought them along to her restaurant job, where they helped her clean. Posada says, I learned very quickly what it means not only to have housing insecurity, but also what it means to make a dollar. When Posada's mother remarried, the family moved to Knightdale, North Carolina. After Posada graduated from Campbell University with a degree in political science, he dove headfirst into the world of community building, landing a job as community specialist at El Centro Hispano, and quickly working his way up to be the nonprofit's youngest president and CEO. A year ago, he left El Centro to start his own consulting firm, Posada Strategies, where he works with grassroots and nonprofit organizations to strengthen their community outreach and advocacy efforts. Now 29, Posada has held position on nearly 20 different boards and commissions for local government and nonprofit organizations, and he's ready to assume a role in elected office. Affordable housing is a chief tenet of Posada's platform. He's currently a renter, and his family lost their home when he was a child, so the cause is close to his heart. Quote, we have single-family use zoning that's preventing people from being able to afford not just living there, but also building and expanding on our affordable housing stock. We want to look at changing the zoning so it includes more people rather than excludes. He's not pushing to build massive apartment complexes in the middle of old neighborhoods, he says. Quote, but you know, maybe a house can be turned into a duplex or triplex without changing the aesthetic of the neighborhood. Posada also prioritizes transit and infrastructure, though he wants to, quote, move away from parking. He's most focused on increasing and improving bus routes, bike lanes, and walkways, specifically for communities that currently don't have easy access to the downtown area. Unlike Kelleher, Posada thinks the passage of the 203 project is one of Carborough's greatest achievements of the past year, describing it as a huge economic boost to Carborough. The project will attract new people to the area, which means more traffic for local business. It will also encourage new development that increases the town's housing stock and retail space. The last major component of his platform is equality for all. As an openly gay man, Latino man, who earns significantly less than median income in Orange County, Posada says he's intimately familiar with the pressing needs of marginalized communities and wants to ensure that their views are sufficiently represented in local leadership. Quote, when I'm talking about representation, I'm talking about bringing in those voices, those community members who have not had the opportunity to be heard, to have a seat at the table. As part of his initiative for inclusivity, Posada intends to further the work he's done with the Reimagining Community Safety Task Force in building trust between residents and law enforcement and exploring options beyond traditional policing. He says, while Carrboro is super welcoming, not everyone is 100% okay with changes that take power away from some of these systems of privilege. It's reflected in events like what happened at present day on Maine. We can find better ways of addressing security. If he wins this race, Posada plans to run for re-election next December. In many ways, his life's work has been leading up to this opportunity. And he says, I've always been into policy and systematic change, and I've learned how to do it from community building. The next step for me is holding one of these seats of power and advocating from the inside rather than the outside. And Jane Porter from Wake County, Bad Blood. This is about the race between two Democrats vying for the Wake District Attorney's seat. It's been ugly for a year now. It just got uglier. It's clearly a stock image, but a disturbing one nonetheless. A sideward shot of a woman's face, her eyes fear-stricken as she's pinned down by a man's hand smothering her mouth. The image appears on a June 29th blog post on the website of Raleigh criminal defense attorney Damon Chetson's law firm. The post is entitled, How to Defend Against Statutory Rape Charges, and it goes on to explain how to do just that. There's only one way. Get a defense lawyer. Any claims that you don't know the victim was underage or that the encounter was consensual, quote, isn't enough to protect you. The race between the two Democrats running in this primary for Wake County DA has been ugly for a year now. Last May, Chetson, who is challenging two-term incumbent DA Lauren Freeman, sent a grievance-filled letter to the Indy that, among other things, alleged there are no Black or Latinx prosecutors on Freeman's staff. Freeman defended her hiring practices and asserted that attrition of prosecutors is an issue that DA offices across the state have to contend with. Since then, attacks against Freeman, including from an anonymous Substack account called Raleigh Watch, have trickled out on social media. Chetson, who has shared several of the Substack reports to his campaign's social media accounts, told Indy that the Substack account is not connected to his campaign. Some of Chetson's and Raleigh Watch critiques against Freeman are well-founded. They go after her for seeking the death penalty, for instance, which she has done 6 times in 8 years as DA, securing capital punishment in one case, or for her seeming reluctance to punish law enforcement officers who abuse their power. In her 8 years in office, she has not prosecuted any of the 21 officer shootings that happened in Wake County. Some are a bit more of a reach. That Substack account accuses Freeman of acting unethically in a case she's prosecuting for the Granville County District Attorney. Another claims her office, quote, made history for illegal race discrimination after a state appellate court overturned an armed robbery conviction after one of Freeman's prosecutors didn't seat a Black juror. Up until now, Freeman has seemed unperturbed by attacks on the job she has done as Wake DA, but her campaign fought back last week, sending out a mailer that contrasts her with Chetson. Under Freeman's own headshot, next to a green checkmark, reads the line, Fighting for us, working to stop abuse of power. Under Chetson's photo with a red X, the heading, Sex Crime Lawyer, Promoting Tips to Beat Rape Charges. Freeman confirmed the mailer is from her campaign. She referenced the image of the woman on Chetson's website and wrote in a text message to Indy that her campaign chose not to use that picture because we were concerned it was insensitive to victims. In a follow-up conversation with Indy, Freeman said the mailer is, quote, a contrast piece of what my work has been about, both in terms of my community involvement and service, and then what Chetson's political background and history is, and the way he markets himself in his current role as defense attorney. She says that Chetson and other special interest groups are working to try to define Chetson as the real progressive in this race. Quote, they have been attacking me for months on a wide range of things, about my operation of the office, my effectiveness, and whether I can keep the community safe. The question is Chetson going to keep our community safe? The way that he defines himself and wants to be seen is something the voters need to be aware of. Referencing that website image, Freeman says the way Chetson markets himself is different from other defense attorneys in the community. She says the fact that he blogs about things like how to beat drug trafficking charges and this picture he has of a woman being pinned down with her mouth covered, to me, shows an insensitivity to victims that's not your run-of-the-mill, I'm out here defending somebody's constitutional rights. This is something different that, to me, shows an insensitivity, an effort to promote oneself that certainly the voters have a right of deciding if that's who they want as a DA. Chetson, who was preparing for a trial scheduled this week, declined to respond to Freeman's comments. But he wrote in a text message to Indy, Democrats rejected the sort of attacks by my opponents when Republicans tried them on Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson. In a statement, Chetson wrote that he is, quote, focused on making the case to end the death penalty in Wake County, stopping the prosecution of adult use quantities of marijuana, ending pay-for-play justice in Wake County, and building a diverse Wake County, adding that he plans to rebuild the DA's office after it had lost more than 20 of the 43 assistant prosecutors in the past three years, quote, due to leadership problems in the DA's office. And he wrote, in talking to thousands of Wake County voters over the past year, the people of Wake County care about these issues and approve of my experience with more than 25 jury trials, my commitment to the accused and victims who I've represented, and my plans to implement sensible progressive reforms. Freeman and Chetson look to be running a close race. Campaign finance reporting through December 31st, the latest data available shows that Freeman has raised $80,000 and spent $34,000. Chetson has raised $58,000 and spent $53,000. Others in the local legal community criticized Freeman for that mailer, noting that Freeman's husband, Robert Padovano, is a criminal defense attorney who practices in Johnston County. Carl Knudsen has worked as a lawyer in Wake County for more than 40 years, including as an assistant DA. He wrote in a social media post he was, quote, deeply troubled to find Freeman's mailer attacking Chetson for being a defense attorney who has the audacity to offer to defend people accused of committing sex offenses. He wrote, she did so by cherry-picking one small part of Chetson's description of the types of cases he handles. Defending individual people, who are, by the way, presumed to be innocent, who are charged with sex offenses is not the same thing as defending the practice of committing sex crimes, but many people cannot make that distinction. And this attack will no doubt be emotionally effective on many voters. Lindsay Blivens-Granados, another local attorney, called Freeman's mailer a disgraceful, shameful, cheap shot at her opponent. She wrote, attitudes like Ms. Freeman endorsed in her ad cheapen our profession and increase animosity between the DA's office and the criminal defense bar and lessen the overall level of professionalism and collegiality we should have in the courthouse. But Freeman maintains she's not criticizing Chetson for his work. This is not about being a defense attorney, she wrote in a text to the Indy. I have tremendous respect for what they do. This is about letting the voters know who Damon Chetson is and how he chooses to define himself. Well, there are a few articles left in this print version. I'm not even going to get to the website. I've got to choose, and I won't even be able to finish any of them. But I'm going to read part of one by Madeline Crone called Sacred Roots, which is about a documentary that's been released recently. And I urge you to go to indieweek.com if you want to read this and the other articles I'm unable to join up. Sometimes an outside presence can help uplift the remarkable nature of something deeply ingrained in ordinary life. Stay Prayed Up, a gospel documentary that premiered to critical acclaim at Telluride Film Festival and DOC NYC, offers a fresh way of looking at what has always been a fixture of black Eastern North Carolina communities and beyond. Triangle-based documentary film directors D.L. Anderson and Matt Durning have a knack for excavating the extraordinary simply by naming it. The project spawned from Triangle-based musician Phil Cook's magnetic pull toward gospel music that resulted in a friendship with Lena Mae Perry, the 83-year-old matriarch at the helm of legendary gospel group The Branchettes. For Perry, best known in her close-knit Johnston County worship community as some variation of Mother Perry, Ma, or Mom, gospel music has been a constant for as long as she can remember. And for the last 50 years, Perry has helmed the performance group named for her home church, Long Branch Disciples of Christ Church in Newton Grove. It really makes me feel good when I come up this driveway because this is my stomping ground, Perry says. Her grandmother and aunt were members of this church when she was young. Perry, her sister, and brother were known in the church community from a young age as the Bennett Three. We pop up, go down there to the front of the church, and we would start singing, Perry says. They would just be, you know, clapping their hands and some singing along with us, and I heard my grandma say, "Tear it all to pieces." And I must apologize at having to even curtail this. There's a two-page article, and I haven't even delved into it much yet. But it says a resounding central tenet of the film is the strength to carry on and to be in practice as a community leader, a church mother, and as someone devoted to ministry. With deep reference and real relationships, the story of Mother Perry and the Branchettes as they recorded their Hallmark Live album was brought to life over the course of 3 years. Well, an insistent tug on one ankle from our Pythons and Constrictors musical ensemble is telling me I better bring this broadcast to a close. So John Fetterson is going to say so long, and I hope I get my shoe back from our musical group as Indie Week has to come to a close. Please, I encourage you to look at Indie Week online, indieweek.com, and read these articles about a couple of great movies that are in our area and other things. And I hope you will listen to this again, if you want to, on our website, ncreadingservice.org. And John Fetterson will say so long until next issue.